You're listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners. To donate, click on the Canada Helps button or go to westhill.net/donate.
The Thanksgiving meditation is always one that is a joy to bring. A challenge because it's so often the same thing year after year after year after year after year. But it's woven this year with the Worldwide Communion Service, which makes it a little bit different. But I want to focus on just what Thanksgiving is. Does anyone know when Thanksgiving began here in Canada? I'm going to tell you, but anyone know? Who said that? Did you say that? Oh, okay. Anyway, that was pretty cool. I'm impressed. The reading, though, that we shared had nothing to do with Thanksgiving in Canada. It was written, the one that Elaine read, was written by Edward Payson Roe, an American novelist who lived in the mid-19th century. He wrote about this beautiful pastoral understanding of nature at the beginning of one of his novels, and gave us now a glimpse of what he would have lived with back then. Now, he was a chaplain at a hospital in Virginia during the Civil War, and after that served as a Presbyterian minister, but he settled in Cornwall on Hudson, now one of a very affluent little town, where he took up writing and became a horticulturalist, spending most of his time engaging nature and interacting with nature as he saw it, and finding, as he did, the deeper he got involved in nature, the more intimate the relationship, the more he was able to appreciate it and to love it. It's a time, though, that we really only just remember, because the world has changed so much since then. In the 19th century, some of the great empires which had been ruling the world tumbled, which allowed for other empires to come in and expand in the way that they did, the British Empire, the American Empire, whether they want to call it that or not, the Russians, Germany. Those industrialized countries grew quickly. Part of the growth in population was because of the increased knowledge of anatomy and the growth of the application of medicine, and so a lot of disease that had been routine before that was stifled, so populations continued to grow. And what in the 17th and 18th century had become was the area that you got your food from substantially changed over the course of the 19th century. What used to be grown, the ingredients that you used in the making of your food, generally came from a 50-acre area. Now, that's not very big, 50 acres. A 50-acre area is what you got all the stuff that you put in all your food from, and periodically you'd get spices from somewhere else or something brought in, but nothing at all like what it is that we know now. In the 19th century, people were starting that process of moving into cities, and so food and how food came to those cities was radically different from how it had been before. In 1929, a book was actually published that coined the word food shed, and many of us are familiar with that word now because it has been reclaimed. But food shed was about how the food around an urban setting got into or flowed into that city. It was taken from watershed, where geographical features bring water from a variety of different areas into one place, which is a river, flows down the river to the sea. And so watershed made sure that water all ended up in a particular place. And food shed, which is not based on natural sources, natural geographic area, it's more about economics. And the book that was published in 1929 talked about the economic factors that brought food into an urban setting so that everyone would have it. It was kind of ironic that it was in 1929, just before the great dust bowl of the 1930s, but that was when that came into being. But someone whispered Frobisher about the beginning of Canadian. Was that Hal? Awesome, Hal. Frobisher was the first one who had a Thanksgiving service in Canada back in the 16th century when he was looking for the Northwest Passage sent there by England to find the passage that went all the way from the East Coast across through the Northwest and over to the Pacific Ocean, a passage that's getting increasingly wider every minute now. But he had had a few trips, and on this particular trip in the 16th century, he decided that he would give thanks that he had managed to make it there with his skin on. The boat was intact, and so he celebrated there on Baffin Island and held a communion service, the first communion service in that setting. So it's interesting that Thanksgiving is tied so closely to bringing in the harvest in Canada, yet it was first celebrated in an area of the country where the harvest, as we know it, has never happened, not in terms of grains and pumpkins and squash and beans. It was very, very different. But Frobisher started that tradition. It happened in the United States around the same time, a few years earlier, where Thanksgiving services were started when a town had been populated for a first year cycle. And so we tie it not to Frobisher, not to the Northwest Passage, but to this whole elemental nature of food and the harvest as it came and in. Of course, the fact that food sheds in urban settings had to bring food in from a greater distance didn't shift the understanding of harvest. In the 19th century, people were still very close to where their food was prepared. They still, whether buying, preparing, or growing food, had a very close contact to the earth, and that's the contact that you're hearing Rowe speak about in the beginning of his story, his fiction, his novel. It's a knowledge that everyone in the community, even those in the city, would have, that food was intimately related to someone's time and energy and their often back-breaking work on farms. And some of you, I know, grew up on farms. And so your understanding and awareness of that is much more intimate than is mine, having grown up and lived in an urban setting all my life. The first cow I ever saw was at the Frontenac Institution, a prison farm, where a member of my brownie group, her mom, worked there. So we got to go and see the cows. And that was the first time I was ever up against an animal that was that big. But in the 19th century, that was very, very different. And so Rowe was able to talk about nature in a way that speaks and would speak to many people. In fact, Rowe, I cut out a little part in that, which said that anyone who lives in the country will know and be able to celebrate and these great conservative values, and they'll never become things like nihilists or people who, socialists, who look at things wrongly. You have to stay connected to the earth, and then you'll be a conservative, and you'll pray to the right God. I took that part out. You can understand why, right? But Scott's song, as he was talking about the weaving of it, brings me to where I want to take this brief Thanksgiving message. And that is that Thanksgiving is often and always, actually not often, it's always given as a contrast. We give thanks only ever in contrast to something else that might have been. Frobisher went back to England and was able to give thanks many, many times after his trip looking for the Northwest Passage. But John Franklin, some 300 years later, never got to give that thanks because he and his crew ended up being locked in the ice and, as you all probably know, perished there under what were probably horrific circumstances over the course of a long period of time. We give thanks for food in this country, even though we know that those who have picked it for us, our food shed now, the global village, they may not have nearly the kind of abundance that we have. And so our thanksgiving is in contrast to that want. We give thanks for our health, and I'm intimately aware and recognize, as Janice shared her thanksgiving about Ken's health, that cancer might have carved a very different journey for me this year. And so I give thanks in contrast to what might have been. But our thanksgivings as contrasts must, we must recognize that and challenge ourselves beyond them, not bringing us down, as I think you wanted to find in your song, that we don't get stuck in that down, but remembering the blessing and the challenge that comes with it. And so as we give thanks, and we are intimately aware that we give thanks in a situation where there is a contrast existing, we must be aware that that is a challenge somewhere else. So let's link this to Worldwide Communion Sunday. Worldwide Communion Sunday was begun, I believe, by the World Council of Churches to help Christians around the world recognize that they were one family, that they could recognize and honor the same beliefs, that they could walk into each other's spaces and know and understand the truths that each other's owned and held. Worldwide Communion was a celebration of the Christian family, perhaps started at a time when Christianity was at a wane, and they wanted to help us recognize and see that there were so many other Christians around the world. But we've moved away from that place of comfort in each other's homes, many of us. Many Christian communities have gone to very fundamentalist beliefs, and so their houses aren't comfortable to many who name themselves as Christian. And we have moved ourselves to a place where our beliefs are in our own challenge to ourselves to live according to those things we believe in, like love and justice and compassion, not things we believe things about. And so our home is perhaps not a home that others might find comfort in. As the Christian religion and so many other religious stories crumble in some ways in this increasingly secular world, there's another family that lies beyond that door that we get to embrace and call our own. And that, of course, is the human family. And so as we, I refer to us as the people of Pangaea, we are the people who live in a world that was once one, our continents once held together, and we once one people. We've spoken about how one Eve and one Adam, not at the same time, but in pretty much the same place, their genetic structure has come down to each and every one of us. So the family that we call upon doesn't need to be as small as our particular understanding of the faith or anyone else's, but that we are all human and that we all must work to share dignity and resources and love. And so that is our communion. Communion is a communion of outpouring, a communion of contrast, a communion of recognizing contrast, bringing those things that contrast to the table, and working to make that table full enough that it feeds all and not just some. And working about disease, making sure that those gifts, those medical treatments, those surgical things that have made me well become available to all, not just the privileged few. And that the task of sharing and coming together in community might be available in so many different places and not just in a few. Because our family is great and the needs for community are great. So that coming into Thanksgiving and recognizing the contrasts and then living through them into a greater abundance, our communion can be of that. That we bring things to the table and nurture ourselves and strengthen ourselves, and then we go out and we offer ourselves to the world. Our communion is about bringing things to the table that we have created, that we own, that we hold responsibility for, and sharing them at the table and then taking them out. Our energy, our love, our lives, our joy, out into a world in need. And so today, when we celebrate communion, it's going to be about food, as it was in those very first early Christian communities where communion didn't have anything to do with bells and censures and particular words that had to be said over particular kinds of bread and particular kinds of juice or wine. but where those who had brought food to the table and shared with those who had not, where everyone put in whatever they could, whether it was just the time that they could spend bringing things in, and they weren't actually able to bring anything, they just set it up on the table, where everyone had something to offer and everyone had something to eat. And so our communion today is a family communion, where we recognize that we are not just West Hill United, we're not just United Church of Canada, we're not just Christian, we're not just Canadian, we are people of Pangea, one with all the people in the world.